Welcome to 3GT, the podcast where three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner, discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome to another edition of 3GT, where three friends, three guys get together and talk theology. We have Barry York, the professor, the president. And I was thinking about this. Should we call you Dr. York, or is that, would that be
appropriate? I think that would be appropriate. He has earned that title.
All right. We have Dr. York.
I just want you to call me the Grand Poobah.
Okay. The Grand Poobah, Dr. York. We have Kyle Borg, who is Pastor Kyle, and then
I prefer the country bumpkin pastor.
Pastor, all right, we got pastor, and then I'm Scott Hunt, the parishioner, as it were. We are glad that you joined us today. Before we begin, I've noticed Kyle likes to do this on occasion. I just want to preface this with a little bit of a. Ease us into the topic of today. We just got through what some love and some hate, and that's election season. We're not going to tell you the results, but we are just about through election season. And some may feel like the world is about ready to end. Some may be overjoyed. That's neither here nor there. What I really enjoy about election season is actually the primaries, when you have people of the same party going after each other. And one of the greatest things that I hear from the Republicans is they like to call each other rhinos, Republicans in name only. Barry, out in Pennsylvania, you had Arlen Specter. He was quite possibly the biggest rhino. This gets tossed around all the time. Conservatives like to accuse others of, you're not really conservative. You just use that.
Do Democrats call each other dinos? Or
I don't know. So what I thought about is, do we have winos? Is Westminster in name only.
Oh, I love course, it. Oh, I'm writing that down. That's going to be my bumper sticker.
So
that's going to be the name of this podcast.
Are you a wino? And what I'm getting at here, for those of you who don't know, the topic today is confessional subscriptionism, which is a big fancy word for are you a wino or not? So Kyle or Barry, would one of you like to just give us a broad overview of what confessional subscriptionism is?
I think Barry, no, okay. So, thank you for asking, Scott. This has actually been an area of personal study for me for the last several years. One that, in a very, very nerdy Presbyterian way, I'm insanely interested in. And you're going to see all the fruit of my brilliant thinking on this, I trust, in this episode today, or lack thereof. So to just get everybody on the same page, we're not going to be talking today about whether confessions whether the church should or should not have confessions. We're going to work with the assumption the church, by its very nature, the Christian, by their very nature, is a confessor. We confess something to be true. And in the history of the church, dating back, I think cases can be made, dating back to ancient Israel, the church has had confessional statements of what we believe. It's very important that you don't go to a confession to figure out what God says, because you have that in the scriptures. You go to the confession to give clarity and expression to what we believe about what God says. And within Presbyterianism, we are a confessional denomination. And that means that we adhere to a pretty significant document written in the 17th century called the Westminster Confession of Faith. Which contains many chapters, even more paragraphs that walk us through those things that we believe concerning God and the duties that God requires of us. And so we are a confessional church. But even within, and this gets to the wino comment, even within churches and groups that would hold to the Westminster Confession of Faith, one of the intramural questions that has often caused heated debate in the history of the church is, to what degree are the members of the church or the ordained officers, whoever it is that needs to subscribe to the confession, to what degree are they to subscribe to it? You know, for instance, the Westminster Confession of Faith has 33 chapters. It has something like, I think, between 200 and 300 paragraphs. Is somebody who subscribes to the Westminster Confession of Faith, do they have to subscribe to every jot and tittle of the Westminster Confession of Faith? Do they just have to subscribe to the bare essentials? That has caused a lot of heated debate. And so when we talk about confessional subscription, we are talking about what degree is a person required to confess the confession. Clear as mud. And if you want, I don't want to keep talking if Barry wants to jump in, but to give some quick historical definitions, this has usually been categorized in four ways. The first category of confessional subscription is historically what has been called absolute subscription. An absolute subscription requires an individual to subscribe to the entirety of a creed or a confession without exception to words, phrases, or doctrines. And Bob Godfrey, in a book or in an essay that he wrote, said, if anything can be called the historic Protestant view of subscription, it would be absolute subscription. But there's other categories too. There's also what is called strict subscription. And strict subscription requires an individual to subscribe to every doctrine in the creed or the confession, but it does not require that an individual agree with every word or phrase. And so it might be that somebody says, I agree with the doctrine. I think it's poorly worded. I think it could be worded better. And that is strict subscription. A third category is what is often called system subscription. And this had its original context really in American Presbyterianism in the days of Charles Hodge and the Presbyterian Church of the U.S. And system subscription says, well, the whole of the confession would be adopted by the church, but there is room for individuals to, you might say, take exception to maybe some words or some phrases or even some doctrine within the confession of faith, so long as none of that strikes at what is called the system of doctrine. Think of system of doctrine as the root system. Just like a tree has a root system that holds it in the ground. So people would say there are certain doctrines in the confession that root the overall theology of the confession that you're adhering to. And so long as what you believe doesn't go against the system, you might be allowed to believe it. The last category is what's called substance subscription. And Charles Hodge, for instance, defined substance subscription. If you were looking at something like the Westminster Confession of Faith, you would say, well, all that we need to agree with is really the substance of the gospel as it appears in the Westminster Confession of Faith, the historical reality of Christ's life and death and salvation by grace alone. Everything else is really extraneous. You can take it, you can leave it. As long as you have these gospel basics, that's good enough. So, in a long-winded answer, those are the categories. You have absolute, strict, system, and substance subscription.
Mm-hmm. I think all that's very helpful. Thank you, Kyle. Just one thing I want to make sure our listeners understand as we're talking about this subject is we're really talking about the ordained officers of the church, and we're talking about the subscription. So in other words, we're not saying that every member of the church has to fall into one of these categories, but we're really looking at the pastors and elders of the church and how strongly do they hold to the particular confession that their church professes. So I'm just wanting to make sure people understand that. I think it was implied in what you were saying, and maybe you said it earlier, but that was a long time ago. So
I would throw, thank you. I would throw in there though, for all our Presbyterian nerds, that is true of our context, Barry, that the RPCNA requires only office bearers to really subscribe to the Westminster standards and our testimony. But there are Reformed and Presbyterian denominations who would require this of membership. So the United Reformed Church, for instance, requires confessional membership. Their members have to agree in total with the Belgic Confession, the Heidelberg Catechism, and the Canons of Dort. And so, but within our context, yes, this is about ordained officers. And when we say they are required, we mean they willingly subject themselves to this. It's mm-hmm. not imposed upon them through coercion. They say, I own the confession of faith as mine. But the mm-hmm. question is, to what degree do they own it?
Mm-hmm. And of course, our membership as well adheres to it, but not to, it's not expected to the same degree as the officers of the church.
Right. Well, I appreciate that introductory discussion. But it does lead
monologue. To... It was a monologue, really. I'm sorry.
Yeah, let's call it what it is.
We thank you for your monologue, Kyle. No. But I think it points to a bigger question, is why is this important? Why is, you know, for a lay person like me, theoretically, I go to church. What do I care about strict subscription, you know, or not? How does it impact the life of the congregation?
Well, our standards, I mean, what gathers us together in local bodies that are united to other churches, if we're in a denomination or some association, is our confession. And so you do want to know, if you're a member of a church, do your pastor and elders, do they really adhere to that or not? And if so, how strongly? I think we've seen in the history, particularly of Presbyterianism, that if people are winos, if they are Westminster in name only, that what ends up happening is that begins to lead to the church becoming weaker and weaker, because its ministers don't really... They look at the Westminster document like a museum artifact. They have a respect for it, for its place in history, perhaps, but it really has no bearing on the life and soul of their current church. Whereas in our circles particularly, we not only just say we hold to the Westminster Confession or held to it historically, but we believe that we're to be actively holding to it now. And so it needs to be taught. So it should really be impacting a congregation in the fact that its doctrines and practices are being taught in a local church. So I think that's a big part of what members of a church should be thinking about with respect to this issue.
I think this is a great question. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm the only one on planet Earth that does it, but you know, say for instance, you're looking to visit a church, or you're looking for a new church, and you go to their website. One of the first tabs that I open to is what we believe. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, what does this church believe to be true? In today's world, a lot of the websites and a lot of churches have maybe a 10-point summary. But even within that 10-point summary, every Orthodox Christian church is going to say, well, we believe the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three persons, one in essence. But, you know, there's still the question, well, you say you believe that, do you really believe it? I remember the Evangelical Free Church of America is a kind of a denomination that doesn't require a lot, but one of the things they require is a belief in premillennialism. And I remember talking to a pastor once in the EFCA, and I said, you know, you guys list premillennialism up there with, we believe the Trinity, the scriptures, baptism and the Lord's Supper, and premillennialism. And I remember him saying, yeah, well, I don't actually believe in premillennialism. And not to call the guy out, but where's the integrity in that? So the church says, we believe this, but you're saying, well, you disagree with the church. Well, in a Presbyterian context, the Westminster Confession of Faith, and in our context, also the Reformed Presbyterian Testimony, is an expression of what our church believes. It is what we believe the scriptures teach. And I, you know, having not grown up in a confessional context, I love that. I love that I can go to these documents and say, here's exactly what this church says it believes. But the question that we still need to ask, well, to what degree do we really believe it? To what degree do we really confess it? Do we really own these truths? And so I think that maybe is where it could also begin to connect with members that may not be ordained officers. It's asking this question, what do our ordained officers believe? What does the church believe? What can we expect in the teaching? What can we expect when we come to this church? And that's where this question becomes important then. So is this just a paper document that you say you believe? To what degree do you hold it? So,
and Scott, just to follow up with that, in our own circles, we've had instances where men who primarily believe much of what the church stands for, but there might be a doctrine or two, or I know in some cases there's other, it's more numerous than that, where men are saying, well, I adhere to the Westminster Confession of Faith, but, and then they have what we call exceptions to that. So at least in our circles, we are not an absolute subscriptionist church. And that begins to impact the denomination that you're in. If men have differing views on things, what's a tolerated different view? What's not a tolerated different view? And so I think it becomes important to the peace and the prosperity of the church.
So I understand what you guys are saying. And to be honest with you, I'm probably playing more devil's advocate than anything.
Sure you are.
That's what lawyers do, isn't it?
So my question is this. You know, if you are permitting people to take exceptions, who judges then what is an essential doctrine, as Kyle put it, and what is a superfluous doctrine or something not as essential? Who sits in judgment of that?
Yeah, so we would not say it's superfluous.
I know, but
I know. I just want to be very clear. So right, but it is. There are some points where we allow a diversity of convictions. And here we deal with the knife's, the razor edge, you might say, between balancing what you might call the corporate conscience with the individual conscience. So for instance, in our Presbyterian denomination, as Barry has said, we allow men to exercise the liberty of conscience to an extent to say, I don't necessarily agree with this doctrine in our standards. But your question is well taken. Well, who gets to judge that? And in some ways, I'll admit, this is not the most ideal, but I think it's the best that we can do until that day when we attain the full unity of faith. But it would be up to the leadership of the church, what we call the courts of the church, to determine whether or not somebody's exception would strike at the system of doctrine in our confession of faith. Mm-hmm.
A number of years ago, there was a paper that went through one of our presbyteries and then into our synod, where there was a movement. Some of the men in the denomination were really concerned that we were getting too loose. And so they were really wanting to tighten it up and bring us back to a greater conformity to our confession in some of these areas that Kyle's referring to. And I don't really want to get into particulars because I think we're talking more about the overall idea of subscriptionism. But in that whole process, and I was actually involved in a committee that worked on this for a while in our presbytery, and then participated in the floor exchange at Synod. One of the things that ended up happening is that you saw a reluctance on the men to just really tighten down the screws, because they did want to preserve the idea that certain men can be good men, want to serve the Lord, but they have a differing conviction in an area that's not, you know, primary to the gospel ministry. And so they decided to do what Kyle was alluding to, that we would take it more as a case-by-case basis, that we've got a, you know, just because you have a profession or a confession of faith on paper, you've still got to, you still have to govern over it with real flesh and blood people in face-to-face discussions. And so one of the things we encourage is if you have a disagreement or an exception, that you would tell the court that's ordaining you about that. So if you're a local elder, you would tell your session. If you're a pastor, you'd tell your presbytery. And then basically you have to leave it up to that ordaining body what they do with that. If the church gets to a point where it decides it won't let you take a certain exception, then you would have to be aware of that. Or if you move to you're already ordained and you move to a conviction and you start making that known, and the church doesn't believe you should hold that and serve as an officer in the church, then you could have your credentials as a minister or elder removed. So that's where we are, at least as a denomination.
And of course,
I want to follow up with a question on that. Doesn't that lead to the liberalization that we saw in like the Presbyterian Church of the United USA? When we allow men to take exceptions, all it takes is a majority of people to say you don't have to hold to the Trinity or the virgin birth anymore. So yeah. Where do you draw the line, and how do we judge that?
Yeah, so that's, you know, so we're talking, just so listeners can catch up again and get our definitions, we're talking about system subscription here, which does allow exceptions to doctrines. And you know, I think your question is highlighting the seriousness with which this needs to be done. Because an exception granted, as you're saying here, could eventually be a position embraced. If you begin to let and begin to allow, you know, yeah, here's a point that the church confesses, but we don't think it's necessary for all of our ordained officers to confess it. You are right. We always need to labor under the assumption that within a generation, we could change. And that's exactly what we see with the liberalization of Presbyterian bodies. You know, some people might say, well, that's a slippery slope argument. Well, sometimes the slope really is slippery. And you need to be careful there. And so, you know, it's not always ideal. It's how you allow exceptions, to whom you grant exceptions, is not always going to be a black and white issue. It's going to call for the applying of biblical wisdom. And one of the things about biblical wisdom is that it's often really hard. Discernment isn't always easy. And so I hope that's not a complete non-answer, but it is. It's recognizing there's difficulties here, and we need to, as we interact with these types of things, we need to interact with that with an understanding that this is difficult.
And Scott, I think it's a danger, but I don't think it's a necessary danger. Our own denomination, just a generation ago, had the confessional position in our testimony that not only just the pastors and elders, but the members of the church could not vote. That was part of our confession. And that was, I think, one thing that was really harming our church greatly. And so that position got changed. And I don't think that liberalized the church, but I think it's helped make the church more healthy and more biblically balanced.
And that's a great observation, because the idea of allowing people to take exceptions stems from the fact that the church can and does err. Mm-hmm. The church is not infallible. And so, which is why in case any listeners are unconvinced, I'm very principally convinced of system subscription, because the church can err. And sometimes it plays in our favor, even though there are times when it does not at all play in our favor.
So that takes me to another question I have, and this is probably not for somebody who's a system subscriptionist, but more of the strict or absolute. At what point does our confessions become a paper pope, where, you know, if we are strict subscriptionists or absolute, does that not tend to create a paper pope where the confession of faith sits in judgment of the Bible and the church as opposed to being subordinate to? Do you see that as a problem?
Well, first of all, that term paper pope often is used by those who want to speak against any kind of confession. So just to bring balance, I know you understand.
Yeah, come on, Scott.
But I just want to make sure our listeners who've heard, maybe you've heard that term and understand that we're not saying then we shouldn't have a confession, because obviously we should. But we're the church. And again, this is one of those phrases that we have to be careful about too when we talk about Semper Reformanda, that we're always reforming. But what that means is that we're always wanting to make sure that we are most reflective of biblical truth, that our system of doctrine, that our manner of worship is reflective of what the scriptures teach. And if we come to a place or a position where we see that that's not the case in our particular confession or testimony, then we need to be willing to tackle that and work on it as a body of Christ. And I think that's why that being a confessional church is not just having a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. It is the men who are giving responsibility for shepherding the church, recognizing that shepherding is not just a local minister preaching the word and working with his people, but part of our shepherding is also to have a real regard for the health and life of the whole body of Christ, and particularly that branch of the church where we have responsibility. So though I might be a pastor in one congregation in the RPCNA, that doesn't mean that I don't care about what's going on in other parts of it. I have to help shepherd over that regionally in presbyteries and more nationally, or however the churches arrange or organized at a synod or general assembly level. I really have to be engaged in that, because I know that changes there are going to impact all those people, all those souls that are represented in the local congregations.
And I do think that is a fair concern. That it could become what you have called a paper pope. And one of the things that we need to keep in mind is that when it comes to confessional subscription, there's a great burden on the individual who is making promises regarding this, and that they are saying, we need to own the confession for myself, to believing this is what the Bible teaches. And of course, there will be abuses of that. There will be mistakes made. But it does require a tremendous amount of trust that we look at those who are ordained and we say they owned the confession as their own. They really believe that's what the Bible teaches. But I do think it's one of the dangers of an absolute or strict subscription.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the dangers I perceive is that absolute or strict subscriptionism leads to the fracturing of the church, because there is not room for debate. Mm-hmm. And so we get micro presbyteries or these non-denominal or small denominations out there who take a particular point and they refuse to bend on it, or they refuse to allow discussion on it. Yeah. And it just tends to fracture the church rather than do what the confession should do, which is bring the church together.
Right.
So, well, I appreciate this discussion. It's been enlightening to me. Hopefully it's been enlightening to the listeners. Is there anything else, Barry or Kyle, you want to add as our time is winding down?
Kyle always usually has a last point he wants to raise,
I know. That's why I offered it.
I have nothing else to add.
Well, that's probably not true. This is a very important topic. I tried to make a little bit of light of it at the beginning, but this is a very important topic for our church. And so I appreciate the discussions that we had. Hopefully it's been an encouragement to the listeners. We
do want to just thank say, I rest my case, Your Honor.
I don't have a case. I was,
come on, get your courtroom lingo correct here. Yeah.
I mean, I think that it's that's true. I rest my, that'd have been Kyle, 'cause he was making the case yes. For system subscription. You know, it is so important for us to know what we believe and why we believe it. And so hopefully this has helped you as listeners to sharpen your thinking on this issue. We do want to thank you for joining us today. We would invite you to go to our website, 3gt.xyz. Listen to the podcast, leave comments. You can go to Facebook or iTunes and do the same. We know Kyle does like to read reviews. He's said that in the past. If you want to make a comment about, I believe he said, his nerdy Presbyterianism topic, you can do that. Anytime you'd like to make a donation, we do appreciate that as well. So until next time, thank you very much for joining us.